Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on Aero. Presented by Ger Sweeney.
Good evening and welcome. Nice to have your company for another edition of Live on Era. Before I tell you what's coming up on the programme, may I just firstly say, just 2 weeks ago, I mentioned that man's voice that you just heard there introducing the programme, a man by the name of Pat Costello, was in hospital and I wished him well. Unfortunately, Pat passed away last week. And at the outset of the programme, I would like to pass on my sincere condolences to Pat's wife, Rita, and his extended family, his children and grandchildren. It's been a difficult enough time because Pat had a lot of friends who would certainly like to have been able to say goodbye to him properly, but because of the coronavirus restrictions, that hasn't been possible. And I suppose the level or the depth of regret that we as friends feel can only be multiplied by hundreds of thousands for his family, who didn't get to see him for many weeks before he passed away. We will be doing a little tribute on the programme to Pat, but first, let me tell you what else is coming up. I will be talking to Ben about the COVID-19 and the restrictions, how they're operating in Ireland, things that are happening, things that people are thinking, how we are managing in Ireland in relation to all of that. So that's coming up. I will be doing the famous Irish birthdays, and they're packed this week. Patricia Traynor has another great story for us as well, so I'm looking forward to that, and I'll be playing the number one song in Ireland on this very day, the 6th of April, back in 1960. So all of that to come. And we'll start with the famous birthdays. We didn't have them last week because of the extended interview with Mike Murphy. And thank you to everybody who got in touch to say how they enjoyed it. Today, the 6th of April, Ian Paisley, clergyman and unionist politician, was born in Armagh in 1926. Tomorrow is the 7th. Martin King, weatherman on TV3 or Virgin Media, whatever it's called these days. He was born in Dublin in 1963. The 8th is Wednesday, and Frank Klusky, the former Labour leader, was born in Dublin in 1930. And Frederick Burton, the painter, born in Curraghfin in County Clare in 1816. The 9th, on Thursday, Circa Cusick. The actor was born in Dublin in 1949. Mark Kelly, the keyboards player with the band Marillion. He was born in Dublin in 1961 on that day. Vincent O'Brien, the wonderful horse trainer, was born in 1917. Gerry Fitt, the founder and first leader of the SDLP in Northern Ireland, was born in Belfast in 1926. Jennifer Samparelli, the TV host in Ireland, born in Dublin in 1980. And Jim Mansfield, businessman, born in Brittas in County Wicklow, is it? In 1939. On we go to Friday, which is the 10th. A.E. or George Russell, the Renaissance poet, painter and journalist, born in Lurgan in 1867. Gloria Hunniford, the British broadcaster, born in Portadown in Northern Ireland in 1940. And William Leach, the painter, born in Dublin in 1881. Saturday is the 11th, and Kathleen Clark from Cumann na Mon was born in Limerick in 1878. And finally, next Sunday is the 12th. Brian McFadden of Westlife. He was born in Dublin in 1930, it says here. He wasn't born in 1930. It may have been 1980. I'll have to double check that. Sorry. Saoirse Ronan, the actor, born in 1994. And Helen Laird, otherwise known as Honor Lavelle, actress, costumier, teacher and feminist, was born in 1874. So there we go, some birthdays for you today. One of those, Brian McFadden, by the time this is over, I will have found his correct date of birth for you, right, from Westlife. Here he is with a great song, it's called Like Only a Woman Can.
I wasn't perfect, I done a lot of stupid things, still no angel. I wasn't looking for forgiveness, wasn't laid up by my pride, shocked by her attention. And someone signed me up for love, I didn't want it, and now I can't live without it. She changed my life, she cleaned me up, she found my heart like only a woman can. She pulls me again. She's kinda perfect. She's kinda everything I'm not. Yeah, she's an angel. And it's amazing how she's patient, even more at times I'm not. She's my conscience. And who decided I'd be hers? I wanna hate them, 'cause now I can't live without her. And she changed my life. She cleaned me up. She found my heart like only a woman can. She pulls me up when she knows I'm sad. She knows her man like only a woman can. Like only a woman can. And who decided I'd be hers? I wanna hate them, 'cause now I can't live without her. Oh. And she changed my life. She cleaned me up. She found my heart like only a woman can. She pulls me up when she knows I'm sad. She knows her man like only a woman can. Like only a woman can.
McFadden and a great song called Like Only a Woman Can. He was born on the 12th of April, which is next Sunday, and he was born in 1980. All right, what have I got to do? Yes, let's take a quick break. I will be paying tribute to my old pal, Pat Costello, and we have another story from Patricia coming up in the next part of the programme. So please, do not go anywhere.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
A number of people have paid tribute to Pat Costello, who passed away last Tuesday, the 1st of April. A sad day for many of us. And if you've just tuned in, the voice that you hear introducing the programme is that of the late Pat Costello. I'm going to play a little clip for you, and it's an extended piece. About 6 years ago, in fact, it was 6 years ago, around St. Patrick's Day, I got the idea that we should have a television station and a radio station broadcasting from County Clare and beam it all over the world. And we did link up with various radio stations in America and Australia and all sorts of far off places. And radio stations took content that we put out on the air. And I put together a schedule for the day, and it included a good friend of mine called Cormac McConnell. Cormac is from Northern Ireland and is a great journalist, and he's a great radio man as well. And I asked Cormac to present a programme that we would record live outside and play it on St. Patrick's Day, and we'd have music. And we agreed among us that the best man to ask about music would be Pat Costello, because we had both worked with Pat in the radio business. So we asked Pat, and it turns out that Pat and Cormac ended up co-hosting this programme, which was broadcast from Cassidy's Pub, not too far from Father Ted's house in North Clare. Place called Carron, C-A-R-R-O-N. Cassidy's Pub used to be an old RIC barracks, and there's a cell in there. There's actually cells in there, right? And Cormac went on and on and on about this cell, and he refers to it in the clip that I'm going to play. So you'll hear, number one, the interaction between Cormac and Pat. You will hear how Pat Costello tells a story. And one of the things that we were so fond of Pat for was that time was never a problem. And he introduces a girl to sing in this clip. And wait until you hear how long it takes for her to actually get to sing, because Pat comes in with another story. So I want you to sit back and relax and enjoy this clip from 6 years ago of two great friends, Cormac McConnell, who I'm glad to say is still hale and hearty, and the late Pat Costello.
Oh, as you can probably hear in the background now, Cormac has retired. He's gone below ground for a little while, and he's left me in charge of the musicians. Now, as you would normally expect, there's a lot of a babble of conversation, because the one thing, musicians can never agree amongst themselves what exactly they're going to play. And we have a clutter of banjos, and we have concertinas, accordions and borons, and a rather interesting percussion or instrument here with a little butter score in the middle of it. But anyway, wasn't McConnell absolutely magnificent? I swear to God, I never heard such a flow of talk coming out of him. It was like a controlled explosion, you know. I don't know if any of you had the experience of coming home very late at night after the pictures and kind of having a slow puncture, you know. You know when the patch had left a bad patch on the front wheel of the bicycle, and you could hear it shh, and you were hoping to take you another 500 or 600 yards, and the soakage was gone in the pump, and she wouldn't be pumping it over up. So that's what it was like. Now it was pouring out of him. Anyway, we'll talk to the lads in a minute, because we're going to have a little short to read. There was a mention, Frank Costi said something about the silver spear,
Father,
no?
No, Father Kelly's and the maid behind the bar.
Father Kelly's and the maid behind the bar. We've no maid behind the bar yet, but there's a lassie after coming in here. She might substitute. Okay. There you are, Mr. Sweeney, is that to your satisfaction?
It was absolutely brilliant.
That warm glow isn't from the fire, is it? Sweeney has that lovely demeanour to him, hasn't he, Cormac?
Yes, but it's easy for him to have a lovely demeanour. The ex-boxer who has reminded me that his son is the new Munster champion, Robert... he showed me the door of the cell there a couple of minutes ago. He put me in my place. That's why I was absent for most of the great music.
Yeah. Well, you were missed, even though the echoes of your extraordinary outpourings could still be heard ricocheting around the room, you know. I was actually thinking about you. Will you tell me something, though? What is your fondest and earliest and simplest memory of St. Patrick's Day?
I think, mostly, when I think of St. Patrick's Day, I think of how, in the north, where I come from, it was a kind of a declaration of independence for people in Fermanagh to put a big bunch of clover or shamrock up on your lapel and go out to mass and go on the parade, and it was a statement of identity. I had a lovely vision... a couple of minutes ago on my way back from Robert's cell, and it was Áine O'Callaghan. Her bloody father is a dub. He's a neighbour, he's a dub, and we won't be able to stop him singing before the end of the day. But the daughter is far,
deadly.
Far better.
Deadly.
Far,
deadly.
Far
yeah,
better. You call Áine and we'll put Sean in his
what
place.
What will I call her?
Just call her for a song.
Oh, a song. Yeah, okay. You see, you have much more experience at this all kind of blather all now than I have. I was a much more serious broadcaster altogether, you see.
You're sending me back to Cassidy's cell.
I'd be groping in the arse of the bag at this stage now for something intellectual and Áine, come up here, will you? Come up here to me. Do you know? For us, Patrick's Day would appear in the form of this little sticky badge. My mother used to get them and they'd put them onto your coat here with a little bit of green on it. But actually, we lived where I was reared down near the bog in Deirdre Flynn. We were actually reared beside the spot where St. Patrick made his largest number of conversions at any one particular time. Did you know that?
Yeah, sure, he was in Tipperary. He said they were all looking for something.
No. Stop, calm yourself. No. The man was on a mission. And there was a bunch of hooligans living down in the bog down near where the famous Deirdre Flynn chalice was found. right? And they were a fierce kind of war-like bunch altogether, and they'd hate you, you know, as quick as they'd look at you. But the bishop anyway said to St. Patrick, he said, look, he said, if you go down and if you can tame that lot, he said, and if you can calm them down and stop all the robbing and the murdering and the pillage, he said, you'll be a saint, he said, here forever and a day. But St. Patrick called his kind of his assistants around him, and he said, fine, he said, we'll give it a shot. And he asked for directions, you see. So anyway, they were, it was a kind of a hot day, and they were on the out between Cashel and the Horse and Jockey there, and heading into the bog, and the lads were getting hot and bothered, and one fellow took off his cap, you see, and a big pushcon of a jackdaw passed overhead, and he was after eating a feed of them kind of underripe, dirty green berries, you know?
Yes, yes, yes.
And he lit, no, your man wasn't greatly endowed with hair, so he had a fine shiny spot on the top of his head. So anyway, the jackdaw let off a squirt out of him, you know? And he was sufficiently high for it to spread, you see. And it came down, and it was fairly hot, so it dried quick in the top of his head. And before he realised him, he had this fine big purple patch on the top of his head, you see.
Yes, yes.
And put the cap on anyway. They struggled way down into the bog. And the next thing, before you could say Johnny jump up, they were surrounded by this bunch of savages, you see.
Yes.
And
you'd still be surrounded by a bunch
of savages.
Oh,
you would. Especially if you were interfering with a man's rake of turf, you couldn't. But anyway, St. Patrick is there anyway, and he raised up the hand and he blessed him and he wished him well, and he said he was here and he'd like to talk to the chief, you see. So anyway, the chief anyway stepped forward and he said he was anxious that they would hear the word of God, you see, and that they'd stop all this murder and this pillage. But what they didn't realise that the medicine man, you see, had told the chief that the person who would save them from damnation, that a man would come up out of a bog hole with a purple scar on top of his head. So anyway, St. Patrick was making no headway anyway whatsoever, and eventually they told him that in sort of unparliamentary language that they'd like if he went away and didn't come back again. And they started picking up sods of turf, you know. And they started shooting the sods of turf at him. So my poor creature anyway, who wasn't as lively as the rest of them, the sod of turf hit him on top of the head and the cap flew off. And here's this big purple patch, you see. Jeez, the crowd went down on their knees. They went down on their knees. They couldn't handle the shots. 720 conversions in about 30 seconds he made.
Oh my God.
700. There wasn't room inside in the chapel for him.
He didn't last 5 minutes in Carn.
Oh, no.
No.
Different ball game altogether. Anya, come over beside me. Oh, no, you have your own. You have your own microphone.
I sure do.
Don't mind this man now, at all, because he's jealous of singers and everything. This one, he can't. Are you going to sing us a little?
I will. I'm going to sing No Frontiers.
Oh, yeah. Okay. More luck.
If life is a river.
And that will give you some indication as to the joy that he was able to bring to people when he was sitting with them, or when they were sitting at home listening to him on the radio. And he was just a joy, no matter what circumstances prevailed. And joining us on the telephone right now, telephone, that's a very old word, but anyway, it's a word. Joining us on the phone is a man by the name of Kevin Keane, and Kevin's stories have appeared on the programme previously. Kevin, good to talk to you. Unfortunately, under these circumstances, it's not a conversation either of us want to have, really, is it?
Not really, Ger, not really, no. Pat was a great friend of mine. We soldiered a lot together, and I know Rita, his wife, with the lifetime.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And I know that the last time that I saw Pat Costello play with Shaskeen or play live was in Gleason's Bar in Ennis, and it was an event that was organised by your good self for the RNLI, and the entire of Shaskeen came, as well as many others came on the night, and a mighty session was had by all. He was always a great man for a session, wasn't he?
Fabulous. He had a great imagination. He had a great interpretation of music, and he was the life of the party, because you could listen to Pat for hours. And you know, those fellas that you couldn't listen to for 5 minutes, but Pat you could listen to for hours. He was a wonderful person, you know, wonderful.
character.
Yeah.
A great character. I know that yourself and himself were working on a project for some time. Did you get it finished?
No, unfortunately. We got five done, Ger.
Right.
We got five of them done, yeah. We were going, it's actually for the RNLI, for my friend Joe Queeley, we were doing it.
Right.
And I don't know what's the outcome now, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see okay. What we do with it.
And that involved some of the stories that you had written down through the years and other bits and pieces, and Pat was putting music to it. And something that was mentioned many times in the tributes over the last few days, time was never something that he gave a whole lot of attention to, because things would all happen in their own time, he would say.
Oh, stop, will you stop. It was unreal. I used to go down to him, down to the house, and we'd go into the studio, and next thing something had come up and he'd say, do you remember this person? He was a great contributor to radio and to this and that, and he had great stories, and the next thing he'd go on about him, and sure, I was enthralled. I'd stay there for the day listening to it.
But sure, that's it. You could never go into Pat's house. I'd often be passing Shannon on the way home and I'd say, will I call into Pat Costello? And I'd say, no, I don't have 2 or 3 hours to spare. And I suppose I've thought about it now and wished I'd gone in every single time I thought of it, but there you go, that's just human nature. When you heard of Pat's passing, it was a shock to everybody, even though he had been unwell for some time. But I know that you put pen to paper for him. Will you recite it for us?
I will do the best I can, Ger.
Please.
The passing of Pat Costello has left a huge void. It's hard to control emotion since we learned that he died. We worked a while together as he put music to a verse. And until he was completely satisfied, the arrangement he'd not reverse. His talent was amazing as he played out every note. Like an experienced politician sourcing out the vote. He met friends in wide circles and cherished them one and all, displayed great knowledge and always kept his eye upon the ball. Many years now have passed since we tuned in to Clare FM. The moment Pat said a word, sure we'd all say, isn't that him? The way he related stories, one would wonder how he thought of all the ideas he gathered and the memories that he brought. His life was of music, song and story, as all of us have seen, whether playing down in Shannon or with his beloved Shaskeen. Pat, you led from the front with Rita, hand in hand. You were always the shining star and the influence in the band. Now that you have left us, there's a tear in every eye. Sad to think that we didn't get a chance to say that last goodbye. The legacy you've left us fills our hearts with pride. Presenters and musicians will all regret the day you died.
Ah, absolutely lovely. And every single word of it is so true and so poignant and just so brilliant. Anyway, a great man, as we say here in Ireland, or yesterday, go reva on him.
And I would like to extend my sympathies to Rita and his family. They're wonderful. Rita made more tear for me than it float the Titanic.
Isn't it great to have the lovely memories? Kevin Keane in Ennis, thank you so much for your memories and your recitation about the late Pat Costello.
All right, Ger.
fabulous sound of Shaskeen, the Kayleigh Band, and a wonderful set of reels. You heard three of them in total. The Blacksmith's Anvil, Bucks of Oranmore, and Crosses of Anna, featuring the very talented Pat Costello. But at this point in time, I must say that I have to include another member of Shaskeen in this particular tribute, because on the 28th of March, the sudden death of the Illan pipe player Pat Broderick was announced. And what an awful week Shaskeen has had, losing two of their members who have been with them for over 30 years each. So I'd like to extend the sympathies to Pat Broderick's daughters, Karen and Sandra, and their extended families also, and his Pat's brothers and sisters. So as I say, a very tough week for the members of Shaskeen. And we remember Pat Broderick tonight, or yesterday, Goriva on him as well. There we go. I did think long and hard over the last few days about dropping Pat Costello's voice from the programme, but I decided that I would retain it and use it as a constant source of inspiration and also a memory of great times, great people, and particularly a great man, Pat Costello. Right, Patricia. Patricia Traynor always has a good old yarn for us, and today is no exception. So, let's find out what she has for us. Patricia.
Well, Jared, today I'm going to tell you a story called Over Nine Waves, which is actually the name of a book written by Marie Heaney, wife of Seamus Heaney, and where she has compiled many of these Irish legends, and is something I would certainly recommend if anyone wants to find out many more stories. This story begins in the north of Spain, in Galicia, many, many years ago, when a tribe called the Sons of Mill lived there. A king named Brogan had a high tower built there where it was possible to see everything for miles. One day, a magician called Ich was high up in the tower when he saw far in the distance what he thought was land. He was very excited and came down to convince his brother to organise a voyage to explore that land which he had seen. His brother laughed at him and said what he had probably seen were low clouds, or maybe that he had been having a little too much of the whiskey, and he was not prepared to go in search of anything. However, Ich's son believed his father, and together they formed a crew, and they set sail. The journey was difficult, and the sea was rough. But after several days, they did see what turned out to be an island. They rowed to the shore and were delighted to see a beautiful land, which, of course, we know as Ireland. They walked around until they met the leaders of the tribe who lived there, the Tuatha De Danann. Ich was dismayed to find out that the leaders were, in fact, three brothers and that they were at war with one another. He tried to reason with them, saying that they had such a beautiful country with rich, fertile soil and rivers teeming with salmon, and there were honeybees and hedge roads full of fruits, and that there was more than enough for all of them, and he couldn't understand why they were at war with one another. The three brothers made peace with each other. But when Ich left to go back to his boat, the brothers decided that the stranger had been a bit too enthusiastic about Ireland, and that he would surely go back to where he had come from and bring back a big army to take the country for themselves. So they went after him and killed him. When the rest of the Milesians found Ich's body, they were both furious and sad. They put his body onto the ship and set sail at all speed for Galicia. When they arrived in Galicia, the Sons of Mill were outraged when they heard of Ich's death. They gathered together a big army and set out to avenge the death of their beloved kinsman, Ich. They had 65 ships in all, and they rowed and sailed as fast as they could. Some days later, the Tuatha De Danann watched the large fleet as it approached the coast, and they saw that those on board were ready for war. So they asked their druids to use their magic powers to prevent them from landing. The magicians caused a thick mist to encircle the ships so that they lost their bearings, but eventually they did manage to land. They set off to find the three De Danann kings, but on the way they met three queens of Ireland, Eru, Fodla and Banba. The queens encouraged the Milesians and told them that Ireland would belong to them and to their descendants. They arrived at Tara, and they chose Amargin, a poet, to speak to the three kings. Amargin explained that they had come to avenge the death of their kinsman, and they gave the three kings an ultimatum. They could hand over their country peacefully, or they could fight to keep it. The Tuatha De Danann were not prepared for war, so they negotiated further, and Amargin then made them an offer. The deal was that the Milesians would return to their boats and pull out into the sea over the distance of 9 waves. They would then try to land again on the shore. If they managed to do that, the Tuatha De Danann would hand over their land without a fight. But if they were unable to land, they would go back to Spain and they would never return. Both sides agreed. The Milesians pulled back over a distance of 9 waves and they attempted to reach the shore. But the druids of the Tuatha De Danann used their magic powers and summoned up a great storm which battered the fleet. Many were swept overboard as the storm raged. At last, Amargin called out to the spirit of Ireland, praising its beauty and asking for its help. There was a lull in the storm and the sea became calm enough for the Milesians to land. Despite the Tuatha De Danann's promise to hand over the land peacefully, they fought and a fierce battle ensued. Many lives were lost, but the Milesians were the victors. They divided Ireland into the provinces, Ulster in the north, Munster in the south, Leinster in the east, and Connaught in the west, and Tara at the centre. Each province had its own king, but the final word was that of the High King who lived in Tara. Although the Tuatha De Danann had been defeated, they did not leave Ireland. Instead, they went underground. And the fact is that they still live there today. People call them the Little People, and they respect them. For instance, visitors often wonder why there is a hawthorn bush in the middle of a field and think it must be very difficult for the farmer with his tractor to have to avoid hitting a hawthorn bush. But no farmer in Ireland would dare cut down a hawthorn bush in his fields, because it is said that the little people who live underneath and who are of the Tuatha De Danann would come out and take revenge by destroying all the farmers' crops.
They say that the lakes of Killarney are fair. No stream like the Liffey could ever compare. If it's water you want, you'll find nothing so rare as the stuff that's made down by the ocean. The sea, oh, the sea is Grogyalmacree. Long may it roll between England and me. It's a sure guarantee that somehow we'll be free. Thank God we're surrounded by water. Tom Moore made his waters meet fame and renown. A great lover of anything dressed in a crown. With brandy the bandy of Saxon he'd drown and throw there a drop in the ocean. The sea, oh the sea, is Grogyalmacree. Long may it roll between England and me. It's a sure guarantee that somehow we'll be free. Thank God we're surrounded by water.
Now the Scots have their whiskey, the Welsh have their leeks. Their poets are paid about 10 pence a week. Provided no harsh words on England they speak.
Oh Lord, what a price for devotion. The sea, oh the sea, is Grogyalmacree. Long may it roll between England and me. It's a sure guarantee that somehow we'll be free. Thank God we're surrounded by water. Irish had sense, they'd drown both in the wine and partition throw into the ocean. The sea, oh the sea, is Grogyalmacree. Long may it roll between England and me. It's a sure guarantee that somehow we'll be free. Thank God we're surrounded by water.
Now
how the Danes came to Ireland with nothing to do but to aim of the plundered old Irish they slew. Well, you will in your Vikings, says Brian Boru, and he threw them back into the ocean. The sea, oh, the sea is broad, yellow, green. Long may it roll between England and me. It's a sure guarantee that somehow we'll be free. Thank God we're surrounded by water. The sea, oh, the sea is broad, yellow, green. Long may it roll between England and me. It's a sure guarantee that somehow we'll be free. Thank God we're surrounded by water.
That's music from the Ludlows and a song called The Sea Around Us. And would you believe that that song was number one in Ireland on this very day back in 1966? And I didn't know who the Ludlows were, but turns out they were a very popular Irish folk band back in the 1960s. And they had a big hit with that song written by Brendan Behan, The Sea All Around Us. Right, let's take a very quick break. Come back to me just after that. And we'll be talking a little bit about coronavirus in Ireland.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
It just dawned on me a little while ago that you might be listening to this programme for the very first time. It's the Irish programme. It's been on air here for the last 2 years, coming up on the second anniversary later this month. More on that a little later on. But if you happen to be a first-time listener, and that's the incredible thing about the situation that we're in right now. People are turning to media and local media particularly, and to radio in a big way, looking for information, looking for guidance, looking for assistance, and looking for entertainment. So if you're one of those that has found Talk Radio Europe in the last number of weeks, well, you're very welcome. It's lovely to have you along. And don't forget to be sure and kind of get involved with what we do. We have a fabulous website, tre.radio. There's lots of information there, lots of old programs and podcasts and listen back to and all that kind of stuff. And there's a bookstore and things. So please do have a look around that and see, access those podcasts, the listen back feature. We've got a Facebook page, which is called Talk Radio Europe Official. And do please have a look at that and share it. Don't be greedy. Share it with others. Say, oi, listen to what I'm after finding, or look what I'm after finding. So if you are one of those people, you are very welcome. We're going to move along now. And before I talk to Ben about COVID-19 and Ireland and other things like that, last Thursday, President Michael D. Higgins released a very short message, and it was aimed at basically just rallying the troops and paying, I suppose, tribute to particularly the local media in Ireland that's under a lot of pressure right now, and regional radio, local radio, community radio stations, newspapers as well. Basically said that himself and his wife Sabina were, you know, thinking of everybody in Ireland, appreciated the difficult times that we were in, and I thought it would be nice to hear that message this evening. Here is Uachtaráin na hÉireann, President of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins.
Knowing how important local media, local radio, community radio stations and local newspapers are to all of our citizens, and those in particular who are housebound, I am availing of this valuable resource to send a message to our citizens. May I send my best wishes to you all as we face together the challenge of responding to the global health emergency, COVID-19. In particular, Sabine and I offer our deepest sympathies to those who have been bereaved in recent days and weeks as a result of the pandemic. To those of you too who have loved ones in intensive care or who are waiting for results of a test, we offer our solidarity. The pain of losing a loved one to this cruel disease has been compounded for so many by the inability of friends and family to offer consolation and support in the way we usually would. The shake of a hand, a sympathetic touch, a comforting embrace, even our physical presence for those few days following a sudden loss are not available to us, for the very good reason that we are all involved in slowing and overcoming the virus. To all of those I've mentioned, may I say, while Sabine and I cannot share your grief, please know that we are with you in thought and in spirit, and that we are thinking of you especially at this most difficult time. May I take this opportunity again to express my deep gratitude, Mar Uachtaráin na hÉireann, on behalf of the Irish people, to our healthcare workers, GPs, pharmacists and their staff, Defence Forces and An Garda Síochána, all of whom are working tirelessly and selflessly to ensure the best care possible is being made available for those affected by the coronavirus and also for the safety of all our citizens. We owe all of you an enormous debt of gratitude. We owe too a debt of gratitude to the many others who are risking their safety in order to ensure the continued delivery of necessary services. Those who work in food production and essential retail, those who continue to care for the vulnerable, and the many others who are making an extraordinary and exemplary contribution to our country at this difficult time. This is a time when each and every one of you has been asked to make temporary but significant changes to our lives so as to enable us to protect as best we can those who are most vulnerable to this virus. Further restrictions were introduced over the weekend, and difficult as they are, may I urge you to abide by them for all of our sakes. For some of you, these changes have led to serious financial concern as you face the loss of income or even livelihoods. These are all issues that must be addressed. For others, social distancing and quarantine may have prevented you from being able to attend to sick relatives or to say final farewells to loved ones. My thoughts are with all of you who face such difficult circumstances. This is a global pandemic which challenges us. In recent years, we have become familiar with the use of the term globalization, usually in relation to trade. We are now living through what is the globalization of a common, shared vulnerability. This moment demands much of us as citizens, but I believe that we are discovering within ourselves new capabilities in terms of human decencies of empathy and compassion. In recent days, so many of you have been giving real, practical meaning to such terms as inclusion and equality. This is a time too when all of us can reflect on how best our individual and collective actions can shape the new Ireland that will emerge from this global crisis. At this critical turning point in our history, we are invited to reimagine and reconstruct, drawing on the great spirit of generous citizenship that has thrived, flourished, been given expression in recent weeks. We know it is through that generous compassion and our sense of shared humanity with all those with whom we share this vulnerable planet that we will be enabled to navigate our way forward to a better and more humane world. We may have more dark days ahead of us, but in the midst of the worry and fear that now shade our lives, it is important that we do not lose sight of the opportunity we have today to draw on those great Irish instincts of solidarity, empathy and kindness to allow us to help each other through this ordeal. As we continue on this journey, let us walk in unity, supporting each other carefully and fully, following the advice that we have been given, thus keeping each other safe. Cossan an Rá, the wheel turns. This virus will pass. And when it does, we can show our appreciation by supporting even more what is local. Radio stations, newspapers and the local economy in every way, including retail and services. Gurbh míle maith is Barbanacht.
Uachtarán na hÉireann, President of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins. Let's check in with Ben Sweeney and find out what's happening in Ireland in relation to COVID-19 and how the past week has been and how people are dealing with and some of the issues maybe that were raised. Ben is on the phone. Ben, nice to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm not bad, Ger. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Normally, I introduce you as the producer of Clare FM's Morning Focus programme. However, you're no longer the producer of Clare FM's Morning Focus. You are moving on to Pastures New.
I am. I'm one of the many journalists, it seems, who are moving from the front line of media to, I suppose, poacher to gamekeeper to go in the reverse and off to a communications role in my alma mater. So I'm starting there in the next couple of weeks.
Great. Well, congratulations and every good luck with that one. Also, congratulations, because as we spoke last week on the programme, you were awaiting your COVID-19 results. You had been self-isolating for just over a week at that stage. And I'm glad to say that just about 20 minutes after we spoke on air, you got the results.
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny how the timing went for everything. I was talking last week about the delay in the test, and only 20 minutes later, I got my results. So, yeah, no, I got the results and all clear. It seems whatever I had, it wasn't COVID-19 anyway, so that was good news.
And hopefully there are many other people around the country and around the world getting those same news and same results on a daily basis from now on. Ben, there have been some issues discussed over the past 7 days in relation to this, and we'll start with the one that we just mentioned there, testing, because we were talking last week about the delay in testing, and that one didn't go away, sure it didn't.
No, it didn't, and they just don't have the reagents. Dr. Killian DeGaskin, who's leading up the lab that does the testing, and he's leading the response team on that as well. He says that, look, we were prepared for this, but our supplier just put stall on it and we can't get the reagents. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, I think they're testing about 1,500 people a day. They're hoping to see this week kind of an increase to about 4,500. They reckon they have the supply issue with reagents solved and that they can get 4,500 a day tested and results given out.
Another issue, Ben, that was to the fore last week was the arrival of the planes carrying PPE from China. That's personal protection equipment, because there had been a shortage of it and a lot of store was put on those flights. But it appears that about 20% of the PPE that has arrived from China is not usable. And that has been kind of putting a spotlight on the frontline workers and the healthcare workers, that they're not getting exactly what they need to protect themselves. And that's an issue, isn't it?
Certainly. And you know, as you say there was a lot of emphasis put on those flights. The issues they were saying was about 20% of that came from China had issues such as the sleeves being too short, so it wasn't properly protecting them. I know some nurses were sharing photos of the material, and they were kind of doubting whether the material was actually strong enough or thick enough to properly protect them. So, and ambulance crews having to you know, reuse uniforms to try and sanitize gowns and the like. But I mean, there's obviously a huge amount of risks there. But probably
when we woke up this morning, we heard news of the new community hubs. How are they working? What are they, Ben?
Areas in a community where a number of GPs and healthcare professionals will work. The advice that's been given to patients who are suffering or COVID-19 symptoms is, look, stay home. And even if a doctor is fairly certain that they might have COVID-19, they won't be hospitalised unless they need it. If you have it confirmed or if your GP is still monitoring you, I heard one of them on the radio and say, well, look, the handiest way this is going to work and the easiest way to explain it is if I have a patient at home and they start showing symptoms or getting worse, then they go into a community hub and they can be assessed by a GP there who can see them face to face, can get a proper chat with them. And then if they need to be, they can be treated in there as well. And it stops, I suppose, cases that aren't serious or you know, that aren't life-threatening, that don't need to be in a hospital. It keeps them all in one area, and I suppose it reduces the risk of a spread there in hospital and saving hospital beds for those who really need it.
And it also avoids GPs having to close down their own practices if somebody with the symptoms come in and that is confirmed. Now, throughout the day here on Talk Radio Europe, there has been a lot of commentary and a lot of comment on Boris Johnson, the British Prime Minister's health. Now, in the last 48 hours or thereabouts, the information here in Ireland released that about 74,000 people applied for the jobs that were advertised. People were sought to come and work and help in this whole thing with the HSE. But it appears that our leader, our Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, has stepped up to the plate as well.
He certainly has. And I suppose it's another tick in the list of things that he's done right, according to the public. People might remember us talking about his speech that he made on St. Patrick's Day and saying, look, we need everyone's help on this.
Yeah.
He mentioned his part, who's a doctor, several of his family members who are doctors as well. So, yeah, no, he was a doctor from, I think, 2004 and fallen off the register of medical professionals since he had become a politician, but has since re-registered and will be doing one day a week. I think he's working in essentially a call centre for GPs. So it's the COVID-19 hotline. That's where they're saying he'd probably be at the moment rather than on the front line. In terms of morale for health service staff and putting his you know, into action, what he's been saying, it's a great kind of positivity boost there.
And we spoke a lot, Ben, finally, about the spirit here in Ireland, the community spirit, and how everybody seems to be looking for a way to help other people out during this very difficult time. And I see this morning a headline headline that on Post, which is our postal service here in Ireland, they're offering check-ins and free newspaper delivery to people who are cocooning, and they would be the people over 70. And I suppose that's very important that people check in on them. And of course, they love their daily newspapers. So that's a great initiative, isn't it?
They certainly do. And, you know, people might know their own grandparents or their elderly parents or whoever whose only trip to the shop during the day would be to get the paper. So this is a very novel idea to give context to people who mightn't be familiar with the Irish postal system. It always has had that kind of familiarity. You know, quite a lot of Ireland is rural, and people would know the postman by name, they'd know all about him, he'd know the residents he's checking in on. So it just makes sense. But now, I suppose, just showing one little thing that can be done that is just making things much more bearable for people, you know, for those who are cocooning, and as the government says, anyone over 70 should be, it's quite a tough thing to do. I'm sure it's very much appreciated, and that news from Plus this morning has certainly been met with very positive reaction.
All right. Ben, as always, thank you very much for the insights as to what's been happening over the last 7 days or thereabouts. We wish you well, and congratulations again with your new position. Glad the test results were negative last week. And enjoy watching Netflix or whatever it is that you have planned for the next week or so.
Listening to TRE from abroad. Thanks, sir.
There we go. That's one of the new listeners I was telling you about a little earlier on. Anyway, that is my lot for today and for this week. I sincerely hope that you have enjoyed the programme that we put together for you. Can I say a big thank you, as always, to Patricia for her great story. She always has a lovely story, and we'll hear more from Patricia in the coming weeks. Thank you to Kevin Keane as well for his little tribute to Pat Costello. And thank you very much to Ben, whom you just heard there as well. So that's it. As always, can I say a big thank you to our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor Jose Antonio Sierra. And I haven't seen Antonio in a long time, but hopefully this cocooning or isolating that we're doing will resolve that in the very near future. Anyway, regards to Jose Antonio. Anyway, look after yourselves and each other in the coming week. Enjoy being with each other, because that's the way it is for the moment. And hopefully next week, things will be a little better for us, not just in Spain or in Ireland, but right across the world as well. Have as good a week as you possibly can. And I look forward to your company next week. As always, if you want to get in touch with the programme, you can do so by email, ger@tre.radio. Until next week, from me, Ger Sweeney. Bye-bye now.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.